Hi, welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull, and you're listening to me and Redbeard.
Thanks, Ian.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here. Well, we visit most of our concert places about once a year, or maybe once every 15 months, it averages out. Well, it's an interesting point that in this so-called economic recession, when times are hard and one hears, especially before coming over to this country, of terrible live concert business. I don't know how it's been in this area, but certainly in the north, the northeast and the midwest, it's, you know, we've heard stories about lots of groups who shall remain nameless who sell three or four times as many albums as we do, who have been forced to cancel their concerts through lack of advance sales. It always seems in that sort of a time of hardship, as it were, when people are carefully counting their pennies and making careful choices as to what they will or will not go and see, that we fare, you know, reasonably well on the whole. And it's reassuring that that is perhaps because of that reputation of consistency, of the word of mouth sort of reputation that lives on from year to year. So we find that people do come and see us, whereas they won't go and see Fleetwood Mac. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to say that. Our American record company, have they... Well, no, I mean, they would love us to be part of that syndrome of hit single merchandising so that we sold 3 million albums instead of only 1 million albums. And whereas I appreciate their viewpoint from a marketing standpoint, and it would be nice to be richer as opposed to just rich, I think it would be inevitably a compromise to be spending that amount of time every year wondering, and not only wondering, but researching actively what it takes to achieve that formula of single hit, you see, because it doesn't come naturally to me to write in that vein. I would have to sit down and fabricate a piece of music specifically designed to... Once upon a time, with our, when we first began playing, we did a track which actually was written in Boston called Living in the Past, and that was a hit in the following few months in Britain. But it was not Warner Brothers, who were our record company at the time, refused to release it as a single over here. They said it was not commercial, although we thought it was. And they didn't release it until some 3 years or so later, when the first Best Of album, which was called Living in the Past, was compiled. And then it got to, I think, number 11 in the charts over here as a single, which was quite surprising. But perhaps I can discuss the idea of the concept album Misnomer here by saying that all of our albums, and I don't think there are any exceptions to this, have been put together in exactly the same sort of a way, which is simply to compile some music, whether it's separate songs or a piece of unbroken music, as was the case in Thick as a Brick or Passion Play or parts of Minster in the Gallery, and without any thought to there being a concept or any underlying theme. I mean, one simply just puts together a piece of music and lyrics which seem the current product of one's slight creativity or whatever, and having got maybe halfway through an album in terms of volume of material, you then sit back and make a retrospective judgment on what you've done so far to see if there is linking the music that you put together thus far some idea, some thread, some you know, some theme or whatever. And then when continuing the album and finishing the album, one continues with that idea so that the overall thing has an underlying quality about it, without it being an attempt to sort of sit down ahead of time and put together, following a concept, a piece of music that serves that concept. I would find that to be very restricting. I was just asked by a chap called George Martin, who you probably remember as having produced the Beatles albums, you know, to write the lyrics for a piece of music he wants to do, which is a definitive concept album. Well, he hasn't sent me his synopsis yet, but I mean, I met him and had dinner with him. He wanted me to do this, and I said, well, tell me what it's all about. And, I mean, he did have a definitive, not just a concept, but an actual story, which he related to me and said, I want the lyrics that will serve this. And I said, well, you're coming to me because you think that I deal in concept albums and am therefore qualified to write in this vein, whereas, in fact, that's not the way I work at all. But I'll give it a, I mean, I'll give it a try. If you really want me to give it a try, I'll see what I can do. But it is the opposite way to the way I work. I mean, I work completely off the top of my head, and it's only in the latter stages of making an album that I actually attempt to tie in the remainder of that album with what I've recorded.
Black and viscous, bound to cure blue lethargy. A sugar plum, petroleum for energy. Tight rope and balance, famously a small reprieve. More please believe we want to be in. Oh,
Hi, welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull, and you're listening to me and Redbeard.
Thanks, Ian.
No, well, I mean, if it appears, you know, to the listener on listening to our albums that they do have, you know, some conceptual merits or otherwise, then that's not a bad thing. It just shows that I'm doing my particular job in the right way. But it's the way I try to work is to have a certain logic, a certain solidity behind the music. But at the same time, it comes from a far more spontaneous source. It isn't ridden with the dogma of having to follow a concept or a storyline that's already been written ahead of the actual music, you see. That would be restricting, and is the sort of thing that movie writers have to do. That's why I've so far said no to the invitations to write music for the cinema. Because, I would be forced to writing very specifically, very clear-cut.
Orion, won't you give me a star sign? Orion, won't you give me a star sign? Orion light, you light, come guard the open spaces from the black horizons to the pillow where I lie. Your faithful dog shines brighter than its lord and master. Your jeweled sword twinkles as the world rolls by. So come up singing above the cloudy cover, step through the people who lost people in that steep. I know you're watching as the old gents by the station scuffs his toes on old bag packets lying in the street. Orion, won't you give me a star sign? Get up from the skyline. I'm high on the mile and the field line. Orion, let's hit the heavens, heady wine. And silver shadows lick across the closing bistro. Sweet waiters link their arms and patted street. Their words was blowing on cold winds in darkest Chelsea. Prime years blind fading with each young heart's beat. Orion, won't you make me a star sign? Orion, get up. At parties, no one to take them home to greasy babysitters and make late night play for lost virginity a thousand miles away. Orion, won't you make it a star sign?
Well, I try to have a private life in some ways, but it's not true to say I never pop up at these sort of things. I mean, only a year ago I can remember having my photograph taken with Debbie Harry of Blondie in New York. She was the one without the beard. Well, yes, I mean, she certainly hides it very well if she has one. I mean, at the time, it was really to serve her rather than me. I think Blondie was not well known in this country at that point. And yes, I think they needed their photographs in the paper. I don't think it was ever printed. Might have got in Billboard or somewhere. But I mean, it was one of those things that one does when someone says, can we please have a picture of you with so-and-so? And I don't mind it if it's someone like Debbie Harry, who's quite a, you know, nice person. But very often one does get dragged to sort of music business functions where one is obliged to speak to out-of-work actors or so-called celebrities who, I suppose, in some way need the publicity or someone feels a mutual need, and that I don't like to do because it's playing a game of rather overt publicity seeking, which I don't like. What I don't mind doing is to do something which is personal, a bit more low-key and a bit more of a genuine communication directly to the people who I feel are our public, like what I'm doing now, for example. I think that is a legitimate thing because it's not me, I hope too, obviously, trying to sell copies of our new record. I mean, I don't mind if we don't talk about the new record at all. I don't mind if we talk about what I do when I wake up in the morning at home. But having said that, I mean, there's obviously that element of about it. We're on tour here to promote an album and I'm here to talk to you. But it's, from my point of view, it's an opportunity to give, if you like, some background information, some more insight into the person and the people who make up the group Jethro Tull, and that's fine. But I don't like the glossy magazine stuff, and I don't like the sort of thing that where you feel somehow embroiled in a very deliberate and very large capitalistic attempt to sort of create huge monolithic organizations, which, I mean, basically go to serve record companies and all of that industry, in quotes, sort of organizational approach. I mean, it's necessary up to a point, but I don't enjoy it. I don't mind being polite and playing the game sometimes, but I don't enjoy it. I do quite, however, enjoy talking to people on a personal level, and I quite enjoy doing radio. I mean, in England, for example, I've done a couple of radio shows where I have been the disc jockey, which is quite amusing, because it gives me the chance to play to people and talk to people in the same way as you do, which is a very relaxed... Yes, well, that's fine. Right, well, as soon as they get Concorde flying into Memphis, I shall jet in here for an afternoon and do something useful.
Explode to celebrate the dawning of the new age of winter, gathering raw momentum on the icy road. With chillness swirling like petticoats in motion, sighted on horizons for 10,000 years. The lady of the ice sounds a deathly distant rumble, with titanic breaking children lost in melting crystal tears. Sunshine, take me now away from here. I'm a needle on a spiral in a groove, and the turntable spins as the last waltz begins, and the weatherman says something's on the move. Capturing black pieces in a glass front museum, a white queen rolls on the chessboard of the dawn. Squeezing through the valleys, watching briefly in the glories, the eyes of mother maids and the new age is born. Oh sunshine, take me now away from here. I'm a needle on a spiral in a groove, but the turntable spins as the last waltz begins, and the weatherman says something's on the move. lovable and straining. The cold creaking mass follows reindeer down. Thin spreading fingers seek to embrace the still warm bundles. The puddle on the doorsteps of a wise London town. Oh sunshine, take me now away from here. I'm a needle on a spiral in a groove. On the turntable spins as the last waltz begins, and the weatherman says something's on the move. She wore a black tiara, red gems upon her fingers. She came from distant waters when northern nights explode. Celebrate the dawning of the new winds of winter, gathering raw momentum on the icy road. Oh sunshine, take me now away from here. I'm a needle on a spiral in a groove. The turntable spins as the last waltz begins, and the weatherman says something's on the
Very briefly then, okay, the first two songs on the album that we actually wrote and performed were the songs Something's on the Move and Dark Ages, which was actually a song we performed on our last tour as a sort of tryout, you see. And those two songs both dealt in quite opposite ways with the idea of conflict. One in conflict in the social sense, one conflict in the sense of the weather, in the meteorological sense. And that the title Stormwatch comes from the idea of the writer, i.e. me, and to an extent the other people in the group, as the observer of these events, therefore watching the storm both in the social sense and in the sense of the weather changes. So I combined later on when I found I had several songs, some of which brought in the idea of nature producing, you know, nice violent sort of effects in terms of weather, and other songs which dealt with a sort of social conflict, as it were, then that became retrospectively the underlying theme behind, I think, nearly all of the songs that are there. Well, now, having said that, you can ponder over your album cover and listen to the lyrics with a renewed interest and a greater insight than you would otherwise have had. It may just, however, prove damn confusing, so I probably shouldn't have said it at all.
Love. cover run with miles, but scar the patchwork green. We're slick tycoons and rich buffoons have opened up the scene. A golden nights and champagne flights have men overkill. Dark ages are shaking the dance. Love's pages a pattern of red. All rages may burn in your
Thank you.
Hi, welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull, and you're listening to me and Redbeard.
Thanks, Ian.
And it's something that I find a spiritual sort of familiarity with. It's not I don't actively worship the old gods, but I will certainly give them the time of day should they choose to visit, like the muse. And occasionally they visit with notions for songs or ideas for songs, and I am merely the hand that writes them down. Someone said to me, "How do you write songs?" I said, "Well, you know, the point is, most of the songs I write, I'm the one who writes them. But my best songs, I just write down." In other words, to suggest that rather like a good many writers or painters or people who indulge in some so-called creative art, you know, we, at our very best, we appear to be only the instruments of someone else's idea. And I believe it to an extent. I mean, I'm saying it slightly tongue-in-cheek. I'm the arch-cynic and the arch-skeptic when it comes to any of these sort of paranormal affairs. But I do, you know, I do go along with it up to a point where one can still remain sane and unsullied with the primeval forces, many of which seem rather naughty. I mean, get people like Ritchie Blackmore and Jimmy Page into dreadful trouble. I mean, Ritchie Blackmore I mentioned as a friend of mine, but he's one who's very much into the sort of black magic, and I mean, he's terrified of it all. I mean, Ashley probably stays awake at night worried about it, which I don't.
Dogs howl, make tracks and growl, their tails hanging below. And young children falter in their games at the altar of life's hide and seek. Between talkers, where Sunday night killers in grey raincoats peek. Through the eye of the hurricane.
Hi, welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull, and you're listening to me and Redbeard.
Thanks, Ian.
You were mentioning to me about the melody in this song, actually. You said interesting melody, didn't you? You said those words, yeah. Yes, it's in fact, one of the approaches towards writing music, I find, is to try and start with the melody. I do actually write tunes. There is a strong, at the moment, veering away from melodic content in what remains of progressive rock, which is precious little, and an incredible move towards stylization. In terms of sound, in terms of the dress of performers, in terms of the fashionable nature of what they do. I'm very old-fashioned at heart. I actually try and write tunes and, you know, with proper lyrics that actually mean something and use the Queen's English, you know, to, if not its best advantage, at least its second best advantage. And so having started with a tune, it's interesting having submerged it in almost a disco beat there that you were, you know, observant enough to notice there was in fact a nice little tune lurking behind that solid 4-4 rhythm. So thank you very much.
Clear light on a slick palm as a misty of the day. Slip the night from a shame, make a marked card play. You call twine at hours down from a heaven home. High above the highest bidder for the good Lord's throne. In the wee hours I'll meet you down by the ringing, on we'll watch the old gods play. By the ringing, by the ringing, we'll wait in stone circles until the force comes through. Lights join in faint discord, and the storm watch brews. A concert of kings as the white sea snaps at the heels of a sovereign whispered. In the wee hours I'll meet you down by the ringing, Lord, I'll take you quickly. Oh, by the ringing, by the ringing, by the ringing.
Anyway, we hope that even though tonight is Halloween, that it's not going to spawn any mysterious turns of events at our concert, like anonymous and dreadful criminally minded people, antisocial people throwing fireworks at each other or doing any other dreadful things of that sort, which would certainly spoil things for me and most of our audience. So we hope that they keep their festive spirit to the proper place and enjoy it. Well, that's okay. I'm all for people dressing up when they go to concerts. It is, after all, the prime return compliment. Since I take the trouble to dress for them, it's nice when they take the trouble to dress for me, so I look forward to it, especially if they're wearing suspender belts and tights. And that's just the fellas, you know, the girls can wear what they like.
This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest Ian Anderson, who returns at the same time next week. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2018, all rights reserved. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.